Welcome to Westgate Messages Plus, where we share our Sunday messages and bonus content. We hope you enjoy this deeper dive into God's Word and how it transforms our everyday lives. Thanks so much for tuning in.
John Ortberg is a good friend of mine. I could go on that, but I do want to save time just to get right into this thing. John has a...
I think that's a wise choice, Kevin.
Yeah. I could get all the accolades and stuff, but you know what? Yeah. I'd be reading for the next 20 minutes. So I'm just going to say I love this guy. He's one of my best friends, and it's been fun to kind of journey together through the years. Actually, from middle school, we've known each other, got really close in college. But John has a podcast now called become.new, right? I think it is. And they could catch that if they want to hear what you're up to these days and sharing how God has taught you and what you're learning from him. But we're in this one on prayer. We're doing a series called Other Minded Prayer. These message plus, we really just want to go further into some things that you don't usually have time to do in a series. So Luke Brodeur is our executive pastor and staff, and thrilled that he's going to be joining us and kind of really leading this as kind of the host.
Yeah, glad to be here. I think it's going to be a helpful conversation, mostly because the questions that we're going to ask and talk about came directly from people within our church. This is real life questions that people want to know about regarding prayer, and I think some stuff that is pretty commonly challenging for people. So maybe you guys, it might be helpful for the two of you in the journey that you've been on to start by just telling us a little bit about your journey with prayer, or what has been meaningful for you in your journey with prayer, or how prayer has been impactful over time as you've gone through different stages of your spiritual walk. John, would you want to start us out on that?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the church, as my buddy Kevin did. And so I always heard a lot about prayer. Church that I grew up in back in Rockford, there was a woman named Evelyn Christensen who wrote a book. She was the pastor's wife. She wrote a book called What Happens When Women Pray that sold like 5 million copies. Mm-hmm. And so prayer is something that we always talked about a lot, but I have always struggled with it. It's always felt to me like I kind of grew up with the idea that you should read the Bible and you should pray. And reading the Bible, Bible study was always clearer, easier, simpler to me. Prayer was more of a black box, so it's been a learning journey. Mm. And particularly with your mind while you are praying. So it was helpful to me when I found out that there were really bright people who had done a lot of work in this and had thought a lot about how do you listen to God? What do you do with your thoughts when you're praying? I find that when I go to pray, my mind has always wandered all over the place. And I always used to have this picture of myself when I would pray or when I would learn about solitude, going off to do that, having these very deep, intense spiritual experiences. Mm-hmm. And just learning that actually, when I go to pray, it's still me that's going to pray. So my mind is still going to work in prayer the same way that it works generally. Meant that there's a guy, Thomas Merton, one of the things he says about prayer is when it comes to prayer, all of us are always beginners and we will never be anything else. Mm. And so it's been very much that way, very much a learning experience, very much a experimental and trying to find out what happens when I try this, what happens when I try that, when I pray, how can I seek to learn to do it better? It's always been on the experience.
Yeah, that's great. That's perfect. How about you, Kevin?
Yeah, I would say for me, prayer is another. I think for most people, this is a struggle. And for me, it's somewhat how you define it. I had always thought of prayer as like requests, and you have a list of things that you pray for all the time. And I'm just not a list guy. I don't do that well. And so for me, primarily learning to pray happened when I prayed with other people. And began to even You know, like the disciples said, Jesus, teach me to pray. And and they basically went off with him, and I think probably somewhat listened to him pray. And that, so that's been one of the most helpful influences in my life. Also defining what prayer is. You know, a lot of times you think, would you rather pray with others or alone? And for me, I would kind of go, I'd like to pray with others. But then as I thought about it, I pray quite often alone when I journal. And as I journal and I write, and so it's not like I just, you know, have a read the Bible, then I take, you know, time just to pray. It seems to be more integrated with other things I'm doing.
So. No, it is so interesting how we're all different. With me, it's just the other way around. When I'm praying with other people, it's always harder because I wonder, how does this prayer sound to the other people that I'm there with? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an old story about Bill Moyers, who is I think press secretary or in the cabinet or something with Lyndon Johnson, who was president, and he was praying one time. Moyers is Baptist minister, and President Johnson said, "Speak up, Bill, I can't hear you." And Moyers said, "I wasn't talking to you, Mr. President." The idea of, it's in some ways for me, it's harder to talk directly to God if there's somebody else listening, because I'm wondering about how does this sound to the other person.
So it's a good thought. You both said that it can be a struggle. And I think one of the big struggle points, I think we're kind of just going to like rip off the Band-Aid here, because this first question really hits, I think, the heart of why a lot of people struggle to pray. And this individual just specifically asked, what's the point of prayer? What's going to happen if I pray? Because it sure seems like we pray for healing, we pray for safety, and still people don't get healed or still accidents happen. And this person, and I think a lot of us at some point or another, are wondering, like, is God actually doing something about our prayers? And what does it mean that it seems like he chooses some prayers to be answered over others, or prayers answered differently than others? And I know for me in my journey, I don't know that I've ever gotten what I would consider like a satisfying answer to that question. Yeah. So what do you guys think?
I think that's a pretty common question when we have these questions come in, is why pray? You know, what difference will it make? That kind of thing. I don't know. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I've always had every prayer I've ever prayed get answered just the way I wanted it to. I would expect people at your church just lack faith.
Wow.
I've never heard this question before. That's kind of...
You just can't relate to it.
It's the question that everybody, I think, asks.
Yeah.
No, for sure it is. A couple, at least for me, have been helpful in thinking about it. You know, part of what it comes back to is God is a person. And it's one of the real important who God is to keep thinking about in our day. You know, a basic question about spirituality is the realm of the spiritual an impersonal force? And in certain approaches to spirituality, a lot of New Age thought or so on, it's approached that way, as though it's kind of like with gravity or electricity, because they are impersonal, you are free to use them to try to get what you want and create heating systems or whatever. With a person, it's a different deal. A person has a mind and a will. And so I am relating to a person. I'm not using a force. And if we think of prayer as an impersonal force or a means to an end, then we think it's not working, like the electricity is not working or the internet's not working. If I'm in a relationship with Kevin, then I will talk with him as a person. And if I have an ask to make of him, he may be in a position where he's able to do it. He may want to do it. He may think it's not a good thing to do. Doesn't mean our conversation didn't work. It's just part of the nature of talking with a person. And, you know, I think for most of us, when we look back on our lives, you know, thank God my prayers didn't get answered when I was 5 years old, or I would be a clown today. So, you know, we're going to ask for all kinds of things that we don't want. One way to think about it is, for example, Paul received what he called a thorn in the flesh, and he prayed for it to be taken away. And it wasn't taken away, but the thought that came to him, and he understood that be from God, it was that God's grace was sufficient for him, and God's strength is made perfect in weakness. So Paul's prayer was answered, but it wasn't granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it can be helpful my prayer may not be granted, but that doesn't mean it wasn't answered. Just like in a relationship with a person, they may not do what I want them to do, but it doesn't mean that they didn't hear me or that we're not talking.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I also think there's an aspect of, again, God's sovereign. He is, his understanding of a situation is far greater than ours. His purposes, we may not understand, like it says, his ways are higher than ours. And that is kind of where that gap is. As a person, he will maybe choose to work in a way that is different or counter than what we're asking. And yet at the same time, I think of that, you know, the disciples asked Jesus, teach us to pray. He teaches them the Lord's Prayer. And then he goes right into, in the Gospel of Luke, to this guy who comes wanting bread because someone showed up at their home, and he's knocking. And I've often thought about that. And I think sometimes in that knocking or seeking process, God is doing things in our own heart, sometimes working through our motives, sometimes working in the situation itself. And so it is one of those complex things. It's a great question. It's a tough question because it's not one you can go give a simple answer to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that's been helpful for me with it over the last few years, I have found a lot of learnings from Alcoholics Anonymous, 12 Steps, you know, which, as you guys probably know, came from an attempt to recapture the practices of Christian discipleship. It used to be called a 20th century Christian fellowship before it kind of morphed into what we know of as AA. And in the 11th step in particular, it talks about seeking to improve conscious contact with God through meditation and prayer. And then with this caveat, praying only for knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. And in the big book, it talks about how very often for people who are addicts, if they get focused on, I want this circumstance, I want this particular thing, I want this solution, I end up taking God's role in my life. And that's what, you know, they have wrestled with their addiction their whole life long. And it's striking for people in that community. You never get the question, there is prayer worth it? Because you're dealing with people where they know if they're left to their own power, they're going to drink and die. And my problem is too big for me. I need God's help. I need to surrender. And so there's just a very keen, clear recognition. I got to pray. I got to have God's help because I have seen the hell that my life will end up in if I don't have his help. And so that kind of the foundational prayer in any given moment is, God, would you give me the knowledge of your will for me in this moment? How can I serve you? When we're talking right now, what could I say? And then would you give me the power to do it? And that prayer, I think, is always helpful. And approaching it from that way gets it kind of out of the category of, you know, I didn't get an A on this test. I asked for this job. I didn't get it. I wanted this help. I wanted my kids to turn out well. I don't know if prayer works or not. It's kind of an optional category. But do I need to know God's will for my life? And do I need the power to carry it out? Yep. Am I self-sufficient to live without that just based on my own smarts? Nope. So that helps me to just bring it back to this is not a theoretical abstract question. And quite apart from how any circumstances turn out, people who are wise spiritually have always understood we have a desperate need for God's help. And prayer is kind of the unique route through which we receive it.
Yeah, I think you make an interesting point there. And I think when I was listening to you, one of the things that struck me is it does, you know, we often pray in Jesus' name. And it's not just to let people know we're going to, you know, quit the prayer soon, you know, we're going to be done. It's, you know what I mean? It's for this idea of I am praying in the name, in his character, desiring to discern what his will is in this. And I think when we do pray for others, I always encourage people, you know what, your Father in heaven, I mean, if I have a kid and he wants something, I want him to ask, and it may not be that he'll get it, but that's okay. But the deeper thing is you are eventually wanting to pray in a way that has discernment of what God's will might be. So even as you're praying for someone and you want someone who you love dearly who is going to die, I think Jesus says, yes, go ahead and ask. And yet part of that asking is, give me discernment, God, of what you are doing in this. Help me to know how to pray. It doesn't take away the angst and the pain and everything else that goes into it. But I think he wants us to come to him with those requests, but also seeking to understand, what does it mean to pray in his name, to discern his will?
It's interesting, though, because you guys, I think the addict example is a fitting one because of the desperation of that prayer. You know, you're asking for the power to resist in that moment, or the power to heal, or however you want to say that. I think when you guys are talking here about a relationship with God, and, you know, you want him to answer by his will over time, or you talk about the process of discernment, which can be a journey that can be a long time. What about the short term? What about in the moment of praying? You know, people want to be able to hear from God in those moments. You describe it, John, as a conversation. Well, people like to listen in conversations as well. So this next question is asking, how do you know when a thought comes to you from God, or just from some, you know, cobwebbed place in your own mind? You know, like, how do you know you're actually hearing from God while you're praying, those types of things? It's like, was it Mother Teresa, the one that said, you know, what does God do while I'm praying? He listens. And then someone asked her, what do you do while you're praying? And she said, I listen. And it's like, that's nice, but also kind of annoying, you know, because you want to be able to hear. You want to actually hear some good directive, and you want to be able to hear. So what do you guys think in terms of expectations while you're praying in the short term? How is that experience like for you?
Yeah, Mother Teresa had a long way to go.
She's such a beginner. Yeah. Thomas Merton was right about her.
Yeah, that's right. You know, for me, Dallas Willard, and in particular, a little book he wrote called Hearing God, was really helpful on that front. And on the one hand, there are some traditions where people can say pretty easily and glibly, God told me something. And I've never liked when people use that kind of language too easily or too quickly, because it often feels kind of manipulative, and it's a way to trump arguments. You know, it's like, if God told you something, probably the idea is so good, you don't need to bring him into it for the idea to prevail. But then on the other hand can be this notion that we never hear from God, almost kind of practical deism. And so what was really helpful, lots of folks have talked about this, I just happened to have read it in Dallas, is he starts with communication. You think, what does it mean to communicate with somebody? Communication is nothing more than guiding thoughts. That's all communication is. In communicating, your guiding thoughts. Because we're having this conversation, you make certain sounds, and I hear those, because we both understand the same language. I have thoughts that I would not have if you had not made those sounds. So all communication is guided thoughts. Because we are finite beings, we have to use finite means to guide each other's thoughts. So we have to make sounds, and then we hear them, or we get a book and look at signs, and those will guide our thoughts. Because God is infinite, he is able to guide our thoughts without using any finite means at all. He can just simply, directly put a thought in our head. And now part of what that means is, I may well not know if any particular thought is from God or not. So there, some folks listening to us now will remember there's a story in the Old Testament in the book of 1 Samuel, where Samuel's this little boy, and he's with the priest Eli, and he hears his name called, and he thinks it's Eli, and this gets repeated. And then Eli finally says, the next time you hear that, then respond, speak, Lord, your servant listens. And Dallas would talk about that as actually the ministry of Eli. The ministry of Eli is helping other people to learn how to recognize when God is speaking to me, when a thought may be coming from God.
I would say, like, when I think about hearing God's voice. It is a learned thing. I will tell people, you know, the first time I ever put a fishing, I fished and I put the line down there with the bait. I always thought every time I was pulling it in, I got a fish, you know, but eventually if you're really a skilled fisherman, they can tell if it's a weed or they can tell if it's a fish that's hit. And sometimes when they're really good, they can almost tell what variety of fish has hit that. And that's something you learn. Or I remember, this will date me and you as well, John, on this, but I think you remember too, when we had the phone and you it didn't identify who's calling you, you could tell the voice and recognize the voice of someone that you had known pretty well. That's my mom was calling. I'd know her voice and that kind of thing. You began to recognize it. And so I kind of say part of it is when they looked at the disciples of Jesus at one point in Acts and said they could tell they were with him, they over time began to really hear God, even through the voice of Jesus, in that sense, even he was there. But I would also put it that that's one of the reasons God has given us the community. Other believers helps us have discernment. Spending time in God's word helps on the content and clarity around that. And I think also you will yourself at times begin to go, oh, that was God. I can do that, but always with humility, you know. But when God speaks, though, then it is time to do something. And it really lines up with others. I think, like you said, if it's a good thought, I don't need to come in and say, hey, guys, God told me this. It's if it's God and you say it, those who hear it are going to hear it that way.
Dallas would sometimes talk about that story towards the end of Luke where the resurrection has happened and there's a couple of disciples on the road to Emmaus. And Jesus is with them, but they don't know it's Jesus. And so Jesus is talking to them, but they don't realize that it's Jesus who's talking to them. And then when he breaks the bread, they recognize, and then he departs. And their comment to each other afterwards, as they're reflecting on hearing him when he was speaking, was, this is really cool, did not our hearts burn within us? And Dallas said, those disciples must often have talked about that familiar Jesus heartburn. You know, and there are people where there's a kind of wisdom to them, or there's a kind of inspiration to them, where when they talk often, you'll just feel like, oh my gosh, yes, I'm so glad I'm here. I'm so glad I'm not missing that. And so that kind of, that idea that they were learning the Jesus heartburn and that they would talk to each other about, Sermon on the Mount, there's that Jesus heartburn.
That's really good. I think that's really helpful, the picture you guys paint about it not being something that you either have it or you don't, but it really can grow over time and you can develop that over time. That's helpful. The next question gets, we kind of moved through the concept of prayer and what that's supposed to look and feel like. Let's talk a little bit about the content of our prayers. Okay, so we'll use the fishing analogy. All right, this question is about, like, What if you're asking for something that you deem to be petty or selfish? Like, is God judging our prayers? Does God deny certain prayers? If you're fishing for a new Tesla or a promotion or whatever it might be, like, how does God feel about that? I think it's a part of our self-critical nature. We always assume we're doing something wrong, and that probably applies to this deep intimate prayer life as well. We want to please God in our prayers and how we speak to him. So what advice would you give to people?
I just right off the bat say it's really good to do as Jesus modeled, and that's to be children, you know, in a sense of we are sons and daughters coming to a father who is so much brighter. I can't imagine a good dad is not going to come with a self-critical voice and go, you know, that's petty. Why did you ask for that or something like that? What do you, John, your thoughts on that?
I think it's a wonderful question. I was reading not long ago a book by Lauren Winter. I'm trying to find it to get the right title of it, and I don't see it right now, but it's something like dangerous spiritual practices or subversive spiritual practices or malpractice or something. And prayer is one of the practices that she talks about where, you know, sometimes we'll think, well, as long as we can get people to pray, that's a win, that will be great. No. You can actually become a worse person through praying the wrong way. So, and you think about Jesus telling the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. The Pharisee's praying, But his prayer is, I thank you, God, that like other people, I'm not like that tax collector there. I tithe on everything and I fast. He's actually becoming a worse person while he'd be better off if he was not praying. And I remember one time being in a prayer group where we made a commitment to pray each day. And one time we came in and one of the guys in the group, who's a judge, I still remember, said, I've prayed now 31 days in a row. And the woman leading the group said, okay, your assignment tomorrow is don't pray. And church that I grew up in, we just said, man, you could be the Cal Ripken of prayer. Don't stop out. You could set a new record. But what she recognized was his self-consciousness of praying every day was producing kind of pride and smugness and self-righteousness that was making him worse off than if he had not prayed. Lauren Winter, really sobering. Part of what she does in the chapter on prayer is she goes back and reads the prayer journals of Christians, mostly women, in the South in the early 1800s who were praying about their slaves. Mm-hmm. And their prayers reinforced their sense of entitlement as slave owners. And often in their prayer, there would be a one phrase, you know, help this slave, and then a long paragraph of anger and entitlement around this slave's bad attitude and failure. And so it was clear they were colluding God into their racist slavery picture of the world. Mm-hmm. So it kind of comes back to, Kev, when you were talking about that praying in Jesus' name. Mm-hmm. And for that not just to be a formula that we rattle off, but to try to recognize, and again, it's like with anything else, when I go to pray, it's me going to pray. So the more junk I have in me, in my life generally, in my sexuality, in my honesty or dishonesty, in my arrogance, in my racism, whatever it is, the more that junk is in me, it's going to come out in all of my relationships, including my relationship with God.
Yeah.
And so to try always to be ready to say, your will be done. That's where coming, just to keep coming back to that prayer of helping you know the knowledge of your will, give me the knowledge of your will and the power to carry it out. Then if I'm caught in a system as slave owners were in the early 1800s, and as we all are, you know, to kind of always have, God, help me to see what I don't see. Help me to change what I don't realize needs to be changed. I think to recognize that is a really important part of prayer.
Yeah, that's very well said. And I think it's a really fitting transition into the next question, where people are asking about, you know, we're aware of the junk, we're aware of the stuff going on in our lives, we're aware of the problems that we want solved. But, and I might as well have written this question myself, we try to solve the problems first. Mm-hmm. We think that, you know, first off, God's given us my personality, my mind, the tools that I have, the people I have around me, whatever it might be, my experiences, I'll do my best to take care of this situation. And then if it doesn't work out, or I hit that, you know, moment of desperation, or that moment of, you know, I'm at the end of my rope or whatever, then I will see what God has to say about this or what he might be able to do for me. It's well said right in the question. What are some tricks or habits to turning this around?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Kev, what do you think?
For me, first, it's just part of it is just that commitment to come before God every day and really examine your heart. It's kind of what we've been talking about. You just, what's going on? What are the motives in my heart? What are the things that might trip me up today? What are those kind of things? So I think somewhat just establishing a practice that you do again and again. It's just like anything you have. They talk about that. When you are an athlete, you know, your mental process of that mm-hmm. is established mm-hmm. again mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. That kind of practice that you do, muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That kind of practice that you do through muscle memory, it somewhat applies somewhat in prayer as you keep turning to God throughout the day, or mm-hmm. you practice it. I think it has an influence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Prayer only makes sense, or works, if you want to think about it that way, in the context of a larger life. And, Dallas would often define prayer as talking with God about what we're doing together.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I really do have a deep sense that we are doing something together, then talking about it with him will make sense. And if I'm looking for him all the time, you know, Brother Lawrence used to talk about that idea of practicing the presence of God. So in every moment, right now we're talking, so we're thinking about this, but now Jesus is right here with us. And so I think that explains something interesting in Jesus's life. Humanly speaking, conversation can involve kind of three different scenarios. And that is, I can talk to Kevin, Luke, with you here. So I can talk to Kevin, when you're right here. Or I can talk to you directly. So when I'm talking to you directly, I'm addressing you. When I'm talking to Kevin, but I know you're here, I know you're hearing what I'm saying. So I'm talking to Kevin, but I know that Luke's here. The third scenario is I can talk to Kevin when Luke's not here. And of course, we all are in those situations where we will say things in someone's absence that we would not say in their presence. But when you think about Jesus and his Father, he could talk to his Father directly. Or he could talk to other people, but he knew his Father was right there, like Luke, you're here right now. But the third scenario was impossible for him. He could never speak in God's absence. It was just clear to Jesus all the time that the Father was always present. And it's almost funny sometimes, like in the raising of Lazarus, he talks to his Father, and he says, "Now, I'm not saying to this to you because I didn't know if you wouldn't hear me. I'm saying this to you for the benefit of the people that are here." We don't do that. God makes it possible for us to live under the illusion that he's not there. So Kevin and I went to a Christian college, and before meals, it was customary for us to pray. We had to choose who is going to pray, and that was usually with a thumbs game. Kevin, you remember the thumbs game?
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah,
people would sit around the table, and then everybody would do this. And whoever lost at the thumbs game had to pray. So then they lost the game. Then everybody would bow their heads, close their eyes. And then the words that came was, "God, it's so good to be able to talk to you right now." As though God were not watching a moment ago and seeing it's the loser that has to offer the prayer. Yeah. So, you know, when you think about prayer, the goal in prayer is not to become a prayer warrior or pray a lot or pray fervently. The goal is to live in such a way that every word I speak, I am speaking in the awareness of God's presence and love. And that's why with Jesus, very often, the line between praying to God and just talking to a person is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah.
So when sometimes he will pray to the Father, talk to God about resurrecting Lazarus. Sometimes he'll just speak directly to that person because it's like, Luke, your presence here when Kevin's here. Kind of doesn't matter in this moment if I'm technically addressing Kevin or I'm technically addressing Luke. I know every word is addressed in Luke's presence and Luke is listening and Luke will respond. That's the goal. And once somebody's actually living that way, then in a very, very deep sense, all language is prayer.
And that's a good way to even define prayer in that sense of a conscious awareness that God is there. And so in that sense, if you're living the way Jesus did, in many ways, all his words were a kind of a prayer because his Father was there. Whether it's there's a direct prayer, obviously, but indirectly as he's speaking with others, it just takes away that kind of God's not around. And so the trick is, what do? I think you grow in that practice of being aware of God's presence throughout the day. And I think there are habits that create that muscle memory that allow for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, I think, so I have one more question for you two before we wrap up here today. And I think it's a little bit like playing t-ball, but I just want to see what you guys have to say about this. Okay, so prayer isn't so much like you need to go and hide in a closet and put on your holy face and say these great things to God, but it's living that lifestyle with God infused in all of it, all those types of things. This series we're in, Other-Minded Prayer, is all about what it looks like for helping us as a church and really anyone to reach the people around them, reach our neighbors, reach our coworkers, reach our classmates, those types of things. And I think in the evangelical world, we sort of feel like sometimes when it comes to reaching people, we need to put on our evangelical hat, or we need to put on our best face or our fancy suit in order to go over and make a big impact on someone's life and those types of things. But we focused on prayer because we really want to think through first and foremost what it looks like to go to God in our everyday interactions with people and ask him to be an influence in their lives or through us in those people's lives. So final question being, what role does prayer have to play in our everyday relationships, specifically with those who we believe God is calling us to reach with the heart of Jesus?
You know, I think, you know, in the series, what I've said, and I think we all struggle with this, so I may have, I think God has given me some of those kind of relational skills with people, and yet I struggle with being so, you know, self-centered and self-absorbed in our culture, et cetera. As I think about it, for me, part of it is just trying to stay present with what's present in their own life and what is going on, which calls for the ability to kind of be aware of what's going on in their life. And that's kind of how I've then said it, is if I'm aware of what's going on in other people's lives, I can then talk to God about that. Mm-hmm. And I truly do believe that in talking to God about that person's situation, God is influencing. I don't understand how it works, but God has told us as we connect and we relate to other people and we then pray for other people, he is at work in their life. And I don't know how to explain that. I just, I trust that. I don't know. John, you might have a better answer to that.
I don't think it's any better. A phrase I like, there's a guy in England, Christian psychologist named Rother Bretherton. And he talks about how in our day, we'll talk a lot about being present in the moment. And he is also a Christian. So he talks about being present to the presence in the moment. So in each moment, God, you're present here. And I think part of that's awareness and part of it's surrender. So, you know, last night we got home kind of late from dinner. I had to do a couple of tasks that took a bit longer than I thought they would. So I was a little bit later just going to bed than I thought I would be. And I was kind of irritated. And I married a Nancy. It wasn't that she hadn't gotten stuff done, but it was like there was just this part of me that wanted for her to know I'm feeling a little frustrated, irritated, and grouchy right now. And I could tell she kind of felt it. And it's not my best self. It's just, and then the thought that came was just reach over and touch her. Just, you know, that will communicate affection and connection. And a part of me didn't want to, because I just wanted to hold on to this weird, tiny, martyrish, pouty victimhood. Look at all I've had to do. So there was that moment of, okay, either I reach over and touch, and then I have to give up my little tiny joy of this little moment of martyrdom and victimhood, or I don't touch where I can keep nursing that, but don't connect. Our relationship is just, you know, a millimeter more distant. And so last night I did it. I just reached over and touched. And, you know, she, you can just kind of tell, oh, we're connected. She felt that. So I think that plays out thousands of times every day. And I think God cares about all that. And God is involved in all of that in almost every conversation, maybe almost every sentence. But usually I miss it. Usually I'm not paying attention or I'm not surrendered.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's really good. John, thanks so much for taking time. We really appreciate it. We love hearing from you. You've graced us a number of times in different situations like this. So once again, thank you for doing that. And
It's a joy. My only regret is this will make it sound like I'm a much more prayerful person than I actually am.
We're all on the journey.
Yeah, that's part of it. And those who ask those questions, I just pray that they gave some light in their own situation. So,
Great.
Well, thank you both. We appreciate it. Thanks for those of you that listened in, and hope that it inspires all of us to continue on the journey. Yeah.